clam so cunning you could put a tail on it and call it a weasel.
You look as happy as a man who thought a cat had done its business on his pie, but it turned out to be an extra big blackberry.
Am I jumping the gun, Baldrick, or are the words "I have a cunning plan" marching with ill-deserved confidence in the direction of this conversation?
Welcome back to the Anglophiles, a podcast where two Americans dissect British pop culture. I'm Sheldon.
I'm Danny.
And I'm really excited to be here today.
Yeah, this week we are talking about one of the greatest British TV shows of all time.
Blackadder.
Yes.
And it's a show that, honestly, I've heard so many people talk about, and it's one that I really hadn't gotten the chance to watch until this popped up on our radar to put on our show.
Well, I've been wanting us to do this for a very long time, but I knew that it was going to be a very important episode for us. Well, for me. So I wanted us to make sure that we got some episodes under our belt before we tried to tackle something like this.
Right. That's true.
I almost, you know, we did Fawlty Towers as one of our first episodes. I almost wanted us to do Blackadder as one of our first episodes, just because to me, I mean, and this is just an American's perspective, and I'm an American millennial, but I think Blackadder and Fawlty Towers and Monty Python are kind of like some of the best of British television.
Yeah.
So, I'm very excited to talk about Blackadder.
Yeah, and I'm glad we waited, though, because it is a very unique and special show for... compared to, like, Fawlty Towers or Monty Python, what you said, like, what you see is what you get with them. But with this, there is an evolution, like, kind of a changing of the guard.
Yeah.
And the show gets very complex and very poignant, surprisingly. Mm-hmm. But,
it is one of the more interesting things, I think, about Blackadder is that it is a very unique show.
Yeah.
I think in terms of comedy style, but also just the journey of the series from its premiere to its end. It's very unique. I can't think of another show that really is comparable in terms of how it played out.
So for the few people out there who downloaded this episode that may not know what Blackadder is, at a base level, what is the show?
It's hard to describe. It is a historical sitcom starring Rowan Atkinson, which most Americans know as Mr. Bean.
Or Johnny English. Or the guy who takes way too long with Alan Rickman in The Shop and Love Actually.
Oh my god, yeah.
But yeah, he plays the titular character, Blackadder.
Yes. So, the series came out in 1983. And it was, that first season was written by Rowan Atkinson and Richard Curtis, who's famous for having done Love Actually, The Vicar of Dibley, Notting Hill,
Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Yeah, like, I can't think of everything off the top of my head, but Richard Curtis was just, he's famous in Britain for being, like, a writer and a director. So, yeah, he and Rowan Atkinson wrote that first season. It takes place in England's Middle Ages, and Rowan Atkinson is playing Edmund Blackadder, who is the, I guess the uncool son of the king.
That's an understatement.
He's like, yeah, there's like his brother, the prince, and then he's another prince, but he's the like weird, stupid one.
Yeah.
And their father is played by, the king is played by Brian Blessed, who, I'm not
that man could fit an entire watermelon in his mouth. head and his mouth is so big.
And when he laughs,
it opens like an anime character. Like, a human doesn't look like that.
Speaking of Brian Blessed, there was a, I think it was a web series. They were very, very short videos on YouTube, and I think they're still on YouTube, where Brian Blessed is playing Henry VIII, but in modern times. He has like a modern wife, and it's him sitting in front of his computer complaining about things while his wife is just like doing the laundry and just like ignoring him. It's very, very funny. It's worth a watch if you like Brian Blessed.
Yeah, seems great.
But yeah, the season one of Blackadder is really not my favorite.
It was a rough introduction. You told me, let's watch one episode, and then we kind of, we got into it, and you talked about the show and how it developed and what happened from there, and it's
just harder to watch. And it's not to say that it's not good, that it doesn't have anything good, because Rowan Atkinson is good in it, Brian Blessed is fantastic in it, and I think I wouldn't say that it's bad. It's just that it's so different from the rest of the season. They have all of these outdoor shots. They have all of these long scenes. And they were still trying to figure out, like, what the flow of the show was.
Yeah.
And apparently it was the studio that got them to... They were like, we want you to do a second season. Just cut all the outdoor scenes. We'll film it all in a studio.
We just want it to be a sitcom. Because at first you told me they didn't want it to be a sitcom. They wanted it to be like the anti-sitcom, where it was a little bit more intellectual comedy, where they didn't rely on a studio audience being there. And it's kind of funny that they ended up becoming one of the greatest sitcoms by the fourth season.
And then the studio had them change. They were like, nobody likes Middle Ages. Change it to the Elizabethan era.
Well, because that was the writer that they brought on. The second guy.
Ben Elton.
He had the idea. And I think that's the biggest and best change. Other than adding... He added in all the insults and people, like, yelling the most creative ways to put somebody down.
Yeah.
But he made the correct decision to say, hey, the Middle Ages is not sexy. People don't want to watch this.
It's true.
Like, we don't want to watch people with poop on their face. It's funny one time, but if everyone is muddy and wearing brown and green and, like, the outdoor scenes are still drab, it's not fun.
And it the Elizabethan era compared to the Middle Ages, like, it may only be a few centuries apart, but there's a reason why it was called the Renaissance.
Yeah.
Because... For some reason, the Elizabethan era is so much more relatable than the Middle Ages to an audience. And the situations that you can kind of play out are more modern. So I think it was a really, really good idea. But
yeah,
I think it's really interesting that it you know, each season of the show is a different era of time.
Yeah, so we've mentioned the first era, or the first season, Middle Ages.
Yeah.
And then what's the second season?
Well, I also have to mention that each season of Blackadder is a different era of time, and it's all English history. But Rowan Atkinson is playing Edmund Blackadder each time, but each time he is a descendant of the first one. So he's always related to the original Blackadder.
Is it ever explicitly stated?
I think he mentioned, in some of the later seasons, I think he mentioned something about his great-great-grandfather. And,
oh, okay,
and,
that's really cool.
In season one, his servant, Baldric, goes on to be his servant throughout all the other seasons, all four seasons.
Yeah, his dog's body.
And Baldric also seems to be the descendant of the first Baldric, too.
Yeah, once a dog buddy, always
another
a dog
change
buddy.
From the first season to the second and onward is that... Blackadder in the first season is kind of dumb.
Yeah.
He's very dumb. And his servant is... I wouldn't say he's super smart, but he's not dumb. And that was one of the big changes that they made for the second season and third and fourth. They make Blackadder smarter and have his servant be dumb.
Yeah, it seems like he does get more intelligent as time goes on, but he falls socially. Like,
yes.
He starts off, the son of a king.
A prince... In the second season, the Elizabethan era, he is a courtier, I guess.
Yeah, he's a wealthy nobleman, it
seems.
He's
a nobleman.
He's in the court.
He's friends with the queen. She favors him. So he's doing okay socially. Third season, he is the butler to the prince, Prince George.
Yeah.
And then... Finally, the last season, he is just a captain in the army. So,
which is still, like, a noble profession where it's leadership, people are looking up to him, but it's so much lowlier than his ancestors, and it's kind of fun to see how the only thing he seems to share throughout history is the cynicism. They're like, he hates the world around him and doesn't understand why people behave the way they
do. He's cynical. He also, each time, is trying to rise up. Like, even in the first season, even though he's a prince, he's trying to become the king.
Yeah, that's, and that's most episodes. He's trying to do something from beginning to end.
He's always trying to raise his social status. He's always trying to make money. And it's interesting that by the fourth season, when it is World War I and they're in the trenches... He's still kind of that, I'd like to make money, I'd like to be, like, more important than I am, but his main goal is to just not die in the war. So, it is interesting, the creators of Blackadder in an interview, they had said he's a modern man. He's a modern... And you can tell when you watch all of these episodes, everyone around him is kind of, like, caught up in the thing of the time. You know, they're like, whatever is hot that week, they're obsessed with it. And he's the only person stepping back going, you're all idiots.
Yeah. And I think that's why it works the second through fourth season, where it feels more like, oh, I am... Even if you are not the smartest person in the world, it's nice to feel like you're the smartest person in the room sometimes. Mm-hmm. Whereas the first time around, he felt kind of dopey. And yeah. It wasn't like you couldn't identify with him. And he had a strange haircut and he was doing a weird thing with his lips. He was trying to talk without showing his teeth. And it was a very odd choice.
And I think Rowan Atkinson definitely plays dopey very well. Yeah. Obviously, because of Mr. Bean, Johnny yeah. English. Like, he plays an idiot very well, but I think he really, really shines as the straight man in the scene and the only intelligent one in the room.
And I didn't know him as that. Like, I saw him, I think, you know, as Mr. Bean first, probably, and then in the movie Rat Race. Mm-hmm. And so growing up, I always saw him as this very goofy... Mm-hmm. like character actor who is very physical with his comedy and always made funny faces and noises.
But Rowan Atkinson is a genius.
And he's young here, right? Like yeah. everyone here.
I think he's, yeah, in his later 20s, early 30s.
The actor who plays Baldrick is like 20 years older than everyone
yeah,
else.
Yeah, he was like in his 40s.
Speaking of, can we talk about him for a bit? Because as it was going on, he quickly became my favorite actor in the entire show.
That is Tony Robinson.
Oh my God.
Baldrick.
He's funny.
Is, yeah, in the first season, he starts off, like, he's decently smart. He's, like, average intelligence. And then he just gets dumber. Like, second season, Baldrick is pretty dumb, but he just gets dumber.
Even though he's dumb, he's got a cunning plan, yeah, my lord.
That's kind of his catchphrase, and I think one of the catchphrases of the show is that Baldrick, every time they get into trouble, Baldrick always has a cunning plan.
And I like that it evolved where, like, he has cunning plans, and then, it gets on to where Blackadder says one of my favorite versions of that is, I have a plan so cunning you could put a tail on it and call it a weasel.
Yeah, he has some great lines. Like, some of Edmund's lines are just amazing.
And I think it goes to show that not everyone can write and direct themselves as well as somebody else can. Mm-hmm. Another writer can see you from the outside, and like the first season you mentioned, Rowan Atkinson wrote it, and they were almost onto something. Mm-hmm. Like, you could tell there's funny there, like, the actors are great, the interactions between them are good, but it just wasn't quite up to snuff.
Yeah.
And then whenever you kind of change it up just a little bit, the formula became perfected.
Yeah.
And it really shines whenever somebody else is telling Rowan Atkinson, here's what to do.
The second season, I love. The Elizabethan one, I love it so much. I think it's my favorite, followed by 3, followed by 4.
I think I might like the fourth one the best.
The World War One.
I really enjoyed it.
It's very good. It's
And as an American, we don't get a lot of World War One movies. Everything's World War Two for us, because that's the one we like to pretend like we saved the day. We came in at the final hour. But World War One is such a harrowing, awful time.
Well,
and
let's talk about season 2 a bit, and then do 3 and then 4.
And work our way there. Okay.
Well, also, we could also talk about the recurring characters and the recurring actors.
Yeah, so, we already mentioned Baldrick's in every season with Blackadder.
Edmund Blackadder, played by Rowan Atkinson, is in every season. His servant, Baldrick, played by Tony Robinson, is in every season.
Are those the only ones in every season?
I want to see it's... No, Stephen Fry's not in the first one.
Right, yeah, because he and Hugh Laurie join the second season.
Tim McInerney, who plays Percy... In season 2, and then later
and one, right?
Captain Darling in season 3.
Or 4.
Tim McInerney. Yeah, 4.
Yeah.
He is in 2 seasons fully, and then he appears in the 3rd one. Yeah. Stephen Fry is in 2 seasons, and he's very good. He
appears
in
1,
yeah. He's great. And then Miranda Richardson. He's always making noises. Miranda Richardson plays Queen Elizabeth in the 2nd season, and she's
brilliant.
Amazing. She's
brilliant
so good. That's Rita Skeeter from Harry Potter.
Yeah. Once you pointed that out to me, my mind was blown.
She's also in Sleepy Hollow. with Johnny Depp.
Great movie.
Also, yeah, there's speaking some good of Harry Potter, Harry Potter people in
Pomona
here.
Sprout.
Yes. Yeah, she plays a couple of characters. Miriam Margolyes?
Yeah. She's the queen's...
No.
Was that not her?
That's Nursi. Is a
oh,
different,
Nursi's somebody
that's
else.
That's a different actress. But no, she's definitely in multiple episodes. But she's really good. But yeah, there's some... Robbie Coltrane is in the third season, and he's in the Christmas special. So yeah, there's some really good Harry Potter people in this.
Yeah, and it's crazy already how many people have been in some of the stuff that we've covered. Like we mentioned, Rowan Atkinson was in Love Actually. We've talked about Fry and Laurie, and to see them back together again.
You know,
it was so nice to see them on stage in something else.
Is I believe Blackadder came before Fry and Laurie. I think it was Stephen Fry, Hugh Laurie, and Rowan Atkinson all went to the same school. So they, you know, it makes sense that they cast each other in all their things. Yeah. But
surround yourself with talent.
So yeah, the Elizabethan second season is great because you've got the Queen and Stephen Fry playing Lord Melchett.
And then one of my favorite just guest appearances is Lord Flashheart. He just... stole the show, chewing the hell out of the scenery.
I think he's only in 2 or 3 episodes of the entire series, but he is usually mentioned when people talk about the cast of the show because he's so insane. I love Lord Flashheart. Yeah. He's always just like running around and talking about how like girls love him and he's so high energy and he's always like thrusting. Whoa. Yeah, he's always thrusting his pelvis and stealing whatever lady that Blackadder's into. Like, it's crazy.
And laughing crudely.
Honestly, like the stuff that he says. I should be offended by it.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
I should be.
He's
annoyed
a terrible human being.
And say, like, oh, this doesn't age, but it's so freaking funny that I don't care.
Well, I think it works in the same way, like, Councilman Jam works on Parks and Rec, where you're like, I hate this guy, but he's fun, so, like, keep having him show up. And I think one of the funniest things about it is that we learned whenever they first did a table read of that scene, he was much more reserved. The actor that came in didn't let them know, like, kind of fully what he was going to do. And none of them knew until they were in front of a live audience taping for the first time. And I think you can see it a little bit on everyone else's faces they're like, oh,
my God.
That's what this episode is now.
He's so funny. All the stuff he says is so inappropriate. Man,
I love any actor and, like, you can't do this on anything but a sitcom. Like, a sitcom where all these actors are trapped on a stage together.
Yeah.
And you are just going off of the audience's feedback of what's funny.
Yeah.
Everyone else there has to rise to his level where they're like, if this is your performance today... we have to meet
you
it.
You have to give it back.
And they do. That episode, it was so good.
Yeah. Also, Hugh Laurie, I think, appears for the first time in the first... or sorry, second season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In, like, an episode. And then he's a big part of season 3 and a big part of season 4. And Hugh Laurie is just... like, this show is obviously about Rowan Atkinson. And it's for Rowan Atkinson. And Rowan Atkinson is incredible in it. But, like... Hugh Laurie is the icing on the cake in season 3 and 4.
It's like
he adds so much.
And it's like he takes over the role of Percy, where, like, Percy leaves, and then Hugh Laurie is like, oh, I know how to play this character in a different way, where it's the same thing where, like, you should be not laughing at him as much as you are. You should be sad for the characters he plays, because he plays very dumb. But he's so earnest about it that in both the 3rd and 4th season, his stupidity is kind of endearing.
Oh, no. Yeah, he's so endearing. Yeah, I love it. Also, before we move on completely from the Elizabethan one, Rowan Atkinson in season 2 is, like, the most attractive Rowan Atkinson has ever been and ever will be.
Yeah, and you told me this going in. You're like, this season, like, and you...
he's so hot.
And in my mind, I'm like, Mr. Bean? The guy in the first season who had the terrible bowl cut and couldn't find his teeth? That guy?
He's...
no.
He's...
but then, I mean... he looks like he should be singing, like, in a George Michael album or something. He looks like George Michael the entire season.
What?
Like, with the earring and the beard.
Well, that was,
and the hair.
Yeah, but, like, that was really big in the Elizabethan time. Was a
I
pearl
think
drop?
George Michael is from the Elizabethan
A pearl
era.
Drop earring on a man. But no, the Elizabethan era is such a good look on a man. Like, the costuming is so good. And so he looks really good. He's also, hold on, I made a list of why he's so hot.
Oh, wow.
In this season. He's clad head to toe in black leather.
You like black?
Looks great.
Everyone looks good in black.
He's wearing leather pants, leather thigh high boots with a very large cod piece. The beard is really doing him a favor because Rowan Atkinson's features are not per se traditionally handsome, but right. The beard looks really good on him. And then it's also trimmed in a way at his jaw that makes his jaw look more squared than it is. So
yeah,
it looks really good. And then the pearl drop earring, and then the high collar with the ruff. It just looks so good.
And it elongates his neck, and it makes him look bigger than he is, because he's kind of like a skinny little guy.
Well, that and the leather doublet that he's wearing is very broad in the shoulders. Yeah.
Makes him seem like he has shoulders.
It just, he
I
looks
I want to go back. You
so
said
good.
He has a large cod piece.
Yes.
As one of the top three reasons you led off with that.
It's part of the outfit, Sheldon.
All right. But, I mean, going into this, I very rarely find... I mean, it's weird. I don't watch a lot of period things in general.
Like,
you know this about me, that I don't watch a lot of historical dramas, especially British ones.
I used to work at a Renaissance fair. So.
Yeah. But, like, for me, it's hard finding a lot of things of that era sexy.
You're boring.
I mean, I can be, but then I also, like, find aliens and Star Wars sexy, so maybe I'm just not
You just don't like historical
human.
Stuff.
And I think I don't... Coming into this, I thought, like, I don't like a lot of historical comedies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, other than History of the World Part 1.
I was gonna say, how many historical comedies...
There are lots of very bad ones.
The thing about historical comedy is some... are very anachronistic and have a lot of allusions to modern things. And I think that that can be funny, but it also takes you out of it.
Yeah.
So I really like, one thing that Blackadder does is it doesn't do a lot of anachronisms. It doesn't really point to the future or like make jokes that are about things from the future. It stays pretty historically accurate. The modern thing about Blackadder is... the humor and Edmund's view of the world
How
and
his
view of life. And that's the great modern bit of the show.
But everything still has weight. Like in the first season, there is like somebody drops off the head of somebody onto the desk. In another season, like you have people going on a ship and they're like nearly dying and about to drink their own urine because of it.
Oh, God.
They take the situation seriously.
Yeah.
And I think that's what a lot of other historical dramas don't hold the weight of it, or they make it too serious, which is kind of like
that's
first season
true.
Of the show.
I also really like how in each, well, I guess it's not each season, I think it's just 1, 2, and 3, Blackadder's clothing is all black, when everyone around him is wearing all of these colors, like bright colors, sometimes muted colors, but he's always wearing head-to-toe black,
yeah.
And there's usually a black snake embroidered on his clothing, and I think that's a really cool touch.
Yeah.
It's kind of like he's always proud of like the Blackadder name.
The black vegetable.
But it also like... It seems kind of random that that was the name that was picked for the first season when his character was such an idiot, but it kind of worked when his character got smarter and started to kind of, like, outwit people and, like, try to have all these schemes. Like, that's all he does through history is try to wind himself like a snake.
And he's just digging down like a snake.
In and out of power.
He's just burrowing into the ground.
Yeah. So yeah, season... 3 is the Regency era of England.
Yeah.
Which I was telling you as we were watching episodes the other day, you don't see as much Regency era in England.
I still, like, even after watching it, I don't know what time period that
okay.
is.
Okay, so
that's
it's
why
the
historical
time,
things bother me. Like, I look at it and I'm like, I know it's before now. And
okay.
I can't.
Well, if you watched more, you'd know. But no,
I don't
listen,
think I would.
The Regency era... of England, I don't see as many movies of it because most stuff of that time period is either set in colonial America or revolutionary France.
Yeah.
So I think the Regency era of England is... slightly
bit of a down era. They don't want to admit this wasn't a good look for us.
It's well, I mean, it's the I think the beginning of the Pride and Prejudice era. So there are a lot of things set in that era. But yeah, it was just kind of weird to see like the wigs, like the powdered wigs and the colonial clothing on everyone and
love
not have it be
wigs.
Set in France. I'm so used to seeing that look in France. So,
powdered wigs, I had a fleeting thought where I was like, they need to make a comeback. And then immediately I was like, I would never wear one.
No,
so never mind.
It would be hot.
It would be awful.
We live in Los Angeles. You would not want to wear a powdered wig.
But if I did have one, you know I'd have about 30 or 40 ringlets. That would go, like, all the way down my back. People would just be like, he's a judge
like
or something.
Like a judge?
Yeah.
Wow.
They would just think it immediately.
You wouldn't have a little ponytail in the
No,
back.
It would be long.
Damn.
Like, it would be a lion's mane of hair.
Interesting.
So much powder. Like, I would walk by in a cloud of powder.
Ew.
Yeah.
Season
like,
three.
Oh, there goes the cloudy
I
judge.
Think is, I think that's a really good season. I really like, because that's Hugh Laurie's big, like, first big role on the show, and playing the stupid prince,
and he steps up well.
Blackadder being his butler, it's just, it's really, really funny. Blackadder's always just, like, trying to, it's funny now that he has Prince George and Baldrick, and they're both idiots, and he has to kind of try to educate them both, but it's not working.
And it's fun because he has a different dynamic with each of them, where with Baldrick, he's still trying to assert his dominance, that he is better than him. Like, Baldrick is his assistant. He can never be smart. But then with the king, he does have to give in a little. To accept, all right, hierarchy
like,
is a thing, but
I
you
do
don't know
listen.
How to put your pants on by yourself.
One of the best episodes, I think, of season three is, I believe it's the last episode where Blackadder and Prince George have to switch places and pretend to be each other. And then they switch, and then Stephen Fry comes in as this really angry general, I think he is. And he comes in, and he's just, like, yelling at the prince because he thinks he's the butler. And then he's talking to Blackadder, and he's like, oh, I always heard you were an idiot, but you're pretty smart. And he's just beating on
the servant.
He's beating on the
quote
prince,
unquote,
thinking
yeah.
he's a servant. But it's just, it's jarring to see someone, like, hit someone that hard.
Yeah.
But it's Stephen Fry hitting Hugh Laurie, which is always funny.
And it's one of those things with a lot of sitcoms, you can tell the very obvious stage punches. And a couple of them here are, where they're staged well. But then there are times where you're like, no, he is beating the hell out of...
The first big hit that Stephen Fry gives him in that scene when he falls, it looks real.
Poor Hugh Laurie.
It's amazing. Yeah, but he's so good at taking a hit.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Let's take a little break.
Is that time for
and have a snack. Every episode, we like to try a British snack or food and see what it tastes like and give it a little review.
Yeah.
So we usually do a British candy bar, and today we've got a British classic. It is a Cadbury Flake bar.
Yeah, and it's got, I'm a big fan of this wrapper. It's got Lakers colors. It's yellow and purple.
Oh my God.
I don't care about the Lakers, but that's the first thing I think of when I see yellow and purple.
Yeah, we'll post a picture on Instagram.
And I like the cursive writing. Like, it's a very pretty package.
Have you ever had a flake before?
I think so. I think?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I've had one, but it's been years.
I was going to say, like, it sounds familiar, and now that you've had it out of the package, it looks familiar.
Now, I've seen a flake... I mean, I've had one in person, but I've seen them in British shows sometimes.
Yeah.
Because I guess there is, you can buy ice cream in England, and it's like soft serve in a cone, and they stick a flake in it.
Ooh.
And I forget what it's called. A whippy, I think.
Ooh. Well, that may be a drug.
There's a thing on Little Britain when the two characters from Little Britain, one of them's like, I want a whippy. And he wants an ice cream with a flake in it. Anyway.
Yeah, at first glance, this thing looks like...
I'm going to break it in half.
And what we've seen on Great British Bake Off, like a Yule log.
What?
You know,
it looks like chocolate that they have poured over and over and over again until it makes a very flaky... Like, they've poured a ribbon of chocolate upon itself, like, 100 times until it makes this little log of curled chocolate.
Yeah, it's...
So,
I mean, it's a very strange thing. Like, it looks like string cheese, but chocolate in a way.
I don't know what you're talking about, but
there's so many little things here.
Let's try it.
Okay. It just falls apart.
Yeah.
I mean, you know my thoughts on just plain chocolate by itself.
You're not a fan?
Not the biggest fan. I need something else going on, another texture. However, there is texture here.
Mm-hmm.
I do enjoy how easy it is to eat. Like, it's not a candy bar you have to really work at. Like, it doesn't have anything that I feel like I'm going to break my teeth
on. It's just chocolate.
Yeah. But, I mean, the way that it... This is an easier chocolate bar to bite into than a big just chonk of chalk.
I think that...
It's real messy.
It is messy. I have the same problem with this that I do an Aero bar.
Mm.
It is a plain chocolate bar that proposes to be something special because it's got a lack of chocolate in it. There's air in it, yeah. You know? And I just don't think that this doesn't rank high on my list of candy bars. While I don't love it, it's Cadbury chocolate, and Cadbury chocolate is very good chocolate.
Yeah, it is.
So it's hard for me to, like, I wouldn't, if this was all that was around and someone was like, hey, want a Flake bar? I would eat it.
Yeah, I want to dip this in ice cream now.
Cadbury chocolate is so delicious.
I think this would go well with other things. Out of everything we've had, I think this is the most malleable. Like, I would put this in my ice cream.
Well,
I think that would be
this
great.
This would be good on ice cream, so you could crunch it up and it would be basically chocolate shavings.
Yeah, it's perfect for that.
You could crumble it over your whipped cream on your coffee.
Yeah, see, this thing, it has uses on its own. I mean, it's okay. Like you said, I wouldn't turn it down if somebody gave me one. I would eat it. But
out of all
the candies we've had on the show so far, it doesn't rank that high.
I wish that we had chocolate this good in the U.S. I mean, like, we do, but...
I am to Hershey's chocolate how Guy Fieri fans are to Flavortown. Like, I get it.
Let's get back to our episode.
Jump back in.
So, yeah, are there any episodes that you watched of Blackadder that stood out to you as being an exceptional episode?
Like I mentioned, I love the fourth season, and without getting into the finale, which I'm sure we'll get into later, I love the episode where Hugh Laurie plays a woman and goes on a date.
Oh, with the general?
With the general.
It's good, and it's one of those gags that... I think when you're watching something from the 70s or the 80s and even the 90s, seeing a man in drag is not, it doesn't always age well.
Yeah, it does two things. Immediately you get tense.
Is it making fun of...
Of gay men?
Is it making fun of men who like to wear dresses?
Mm-hmm.
Is it making fun of... Yeah, there's a lot that can go wrong with a joke like that.
Hugh Laurie plays that so well.
It's good. It doesn't seem to be poking fun at anyone but Hugh Laurie. Do you remember the lady on A Bit of Fry and Laurie where he was like, I'm perfect, I'm beautiful, I'm sexy,
yes.
I'm successful, I'm talented. And then they were like, what's wrong with you? And she's like, I suffer from low self-esteem. Hugh Laurie is so good at being fancy.
And I think he understands comedy beats more than anyone else. Like, he is so good at timing a joke. Like, in that very episode where the audience is a bit ahead of Rowan Atkinson. Like, whenever Hugh Laurie comes in as a woman, as he's describing his date going on that, like, the big dance.
Yeah.
The audience kind of has a peek, and we're like, okay, if you've seen some sitcoms, you know where this is heading. Mm. But Rowan Atkinson has no idea. And the way he's questioning him, he's like, well, I mean, at least he didn't propose to you. And then the camera just shows Hugh Laurie biting down on a rose in such a way that, like, nobody has ever made that physical choice before to bite a rose the way you would, like, bite your fist or blush. And immediately, you know everything.
He's smitten.
It's masterful.
One of my favorite episodes is probably the first appearance of Lord Flashheart when a young man starts working for Blackadder, but it's really a young woman who's just trying to make money for her father, but she doesn't want to go into prostitution, so she dresses like a man and works for Blackadder.
What's her name?
Bob.
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 But that's a great episode.
I also really like in the fourth season when it's the same episode where George dresses as Georgina for the Palladium show that they're putting on, and Baldrick's part of the act, and his act is that he balances a slug on his upper lip, and then he does a Charlie Chaplin impression. It's so funny. It's so good. I love Baldrick.
My favorite Baldrick bit is whenever he comes in with a rat dangling from his face. He
has, like, this mask on, yeah.
It's a leather contraption.
He says he lays down and opens his mouth, and he has his cheese dangling in front of his mouth, and he's trying to get a mouse to crawl into his mouth so he can eat the mouse.
So he can grab it and eat him.
And then later he comes in with a mouse dangling and says he's trying to catch a cat.
I wish it would have kept escalating and become like, if you give a mouse a cookie, but if you give a Baldrick a mouse. Ugh. And he's just always so filthy.
I know.
Constantly dirty.
Probably the constant in Baldrick's character is that he is A, really dumb, B, has a cunning plan,
and C,
always dirty.
He is, like, if any character in real life or, like, in live action could be the visual representation of Linus from Peanuts, that's him.
Or Pigpen.
Pigpen. Ugh,
Pen. Speaking of Baldrick, I do love the episode where Blackadder was trying to get Prince George to make him a lord. And Prince George made Baldrick a lord.
Yep.
And the whole episode, Baldrick's talking about how all he wants in life is turnips. And he wants to buy nice turnips. And if he gets a lot of money, he'll buy a really nice big turnip in the country. And he's obsessed with turnips. And then by the end of the episode, like, Blackadder's, like, beating him up in the kitchen. And he's like, how dare you? Like, I was supposed to be made a lord. And then he's like, where's that money I gave you? And Baldrick just looks over with incredible love in his face.
Just pride.
At the biggest turnip.
It's the size of a pumpkin. It's enormous. Turnip should not be that big.
And then Blackadder picks it up and puts it on his head. And that, to me, I think would make an incredible cosplay, is wearing that fancy fur-lined cape. The, like, royal red cape with a giant turnip on your head.
Yeah.
If I saw somebody walking around cosplaying that, I just would have to, like, shake their hand. I would be so happy. Maybe I should do it.
Yeah. I think it's a bit of a niche cosplay, but
I think I'm probably the same height as Baldrick.
Oh.
I think so.
He's a petite man. Small.
And that's, you know, that's something that, this is a question we always like to ask when we do a show on here is, does it age well? How well does it age? And I think that Blackadder really does hold up in terms of being very funny, and the humor is pretty timeless, and the jokes are just so good. But one of the things that kind of puts me on edge when I watch Blackadder is the amount of times that Blackadder is striking Baldrick, and, like, the amount of times
they beat each other up a lot.
Punch, well, but it's not each other. Like, it's always Blackadder beating on him. It's very similar to Basil from Fawlty Towers beating up on Manuel. It's someone in power beating on their underling who is much smaller than them, and it's still funny because it's all supposed to be funny, but it's a little hard to watch.
Yeah, and even to where, like, they take it a step further, and he kicks a cat, and he's like, "Oh, it's just the circle of life. Because if I kick this cat, then the cat's gonna go after this mouse, and then the mouse is gonna, bite you, Baldrick."
Yeah, Baldrick's always getting, I don't know, hit and kicked and picked on. But I'm really impressed at how well the comedy in this show really holds up, you know?
Yeah.
It's very, very funny. And I think it's because it's so clever, you know?
Yeah. And, well, we've talked about how well does it age. And another thing we often talk about is how British is this show? Would it translate to other cultures?
No.
Not at all.
No.
This is the most British.
It's four separate eras of British history.
And, like, probably a quarter of the time, if they say a character's name, I'm like, I don't know if that's a real person or not. I'm like...
Oh, like a historical person?
Yeah. Or they're like, talking about stuff, and I'm like, I'm sure that was just a joke I don't get it.
Only characters in Blackadder that are real historical characters are royalty. Everyone else is kind of a made-up character.
But then, even then, like...
Sir Walter Raleigh... he's not royalty, but he's a real person. We have so so much to learn about the Middle Ages.
Like, I'll read all about the British Spitfire plane, which I am obsessed with. Love that plane, one of the greatest ones that's ever flown.
That's a good episode of Blackadder, is the one in season 4, the World War I, when Lord Flashheart, like, lands in the trenches, and, like, his intro to that scene when he just, like, punches Blackadder and puts his boot on him, and he's like, yeah. I caught you! Like, life is great when you're in the, you know, like, the Royal Air Force, where I'm in the 20-minuters, and then Baldrick and George and Blackadder all decide, oh, they'll be safer if they join the 20-minuters.
We won't be in the front lines.
Yeah. But then they learn it's more dangerous.
Yeah. That you last for 20 minutes and then you die.
That's a great episode. Lord Flashheart is great in that. That's also the one where they get captured in Germany.
Mm-hmm. If you had to tell somebody that had never seen the show, how would you recommend it to them? Because like you said, it's a lot. It's 4 seasons. It's all very different. I think you could arguably skip the first season if you wanted and be fine.
I think if you like very clever jokes, very witty, and if you like insult humor, because Blackadder has some of the best insults I've ever heard, then I think you'd like it. And if you like English history, you would really like some of the seasons.
Some of them.
Yeah.
It really is laugh out loud funny. And it's something like, I really enjoy watching some of the first stuff that people do, watching, hey, where did they come from?
Yeah.
And it's amazing seeing out of the gate how talented Rowan Atkinson and Hugh Fry and...
Hugh Fry. Stephen Lorre.
That would be a combo. Just switch their heads and see what would happen.
Stephen Fry and Hugh Lorre are so young in this. Yeah. It's so crazy.
Stephen Fry is fit.
Yeah.
He's in shape.
Yeah. He's quite handsome, and now, actually. Very tall.
I just want to, like, constantly be in another room from you and just say, burp, as I enter the room. It's my new favorite thing.
Oh, God. Burp. I love the noises that Stephen Fry makes. It's just...
He makes great choices.
It's brilliant. We didn't talk about the last episode.
Oh, yeah, we have to.
Okay, we have to talk about the last season of Blackadder. I mean, we've already kind of hit on it, but we got to talk about the last episode of Blackadder, because it is kind of... I think the show is very good, and the show is very unique. But I think that the last episode of Blackadder really kind of adds in and sets it apart from other shows. Yeah. So,
and I think in the whole final season, basically there's always this threat of, hey, we're going to have to go up, leave the trenches and cross no man's land and fight.
Yeah.
That's constantly looming over their heads.
They are talking about that. I think from episode 1, they keep talking about how eventually they're going to be ordered over the top.
Yeah.
Which
is very real. The soldiers having no idea, just like literally
just running
living,
out there,
living in a trench under the ground,
just trying to get some ground.
And even then, you're fighting for inches. You're fighting for a couple of feet, and then they dig a new trench, or they just push forward. Like, it's such a miserable time. And every other episode, they get out of it, or something happens, and they don't have to do it.
Yeah.
And leading up into the final episode, there is the order, we're finally going across no man's land, everyone's making a push, you are part of this group. And I think up until the last, like, 2 or 3 minutes, you think, oh, they're going to get out of this. Well, he's not going to do it. Maybe
Blackadder
everyone else will, but he won't.
Keeps trying plans from, like, calling people in power to pretending he's mad. Like, he
putting underwear on his head.
Yeah, like, he keeps doing all these things, and you think, oh, he's going to get out of it. You know what's also heartbreaking to me is that, like, the entire season, Captain Darling, played by Tim McInerney, is kind of like...
We didn't talk about that at all.
He's kind of like... he's kind of like the nemesis to Blackadder. He, like, everyone's like, ooh, Blackadder, you're so great. Like, you're so smart. But,
yeah, he's
like...
He's his foil.
Captain Darling is always kind of like, I'm on to you. Like, he's
the only one that sees through
it. He's the only person that's like, I see what you're trying to do. And he's kind of a twit himself.
Well, I think
so
it's because
really
he's
funny.
Done it.
Yeah, he, like, it's true.
He doesn't want somebody else to out him as,
conned,
like...
Captain Darling has conned his way away from the front lines and into a cozy office where he can give people orders and, like, wait on the, general. And it's, amazing to see him get so mad at Blackadder. And Blackadder, like, always kind of gets the best of him. And so it's really heartbreaking to me, that final scene when the general... He's not a general. What is he, like, a... I don't remember, but he basically orders darling, to the trenches, to the front line for the push over the top.
And basically a death sentence.
I know, and Darling's just like, I don't want to. And he's like, oh, but I, you know, I can't deprive
you. Oh, you don't
want to
leave me?
He's like, yeah. He just makes jokes, and then he's like, I remember the first time I watched the finale, someone had warned me, it gets really dark at the end. And I was like, oh, ha, 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 okay. I wasn't really prepared, but that was kind of, to me, the first, like, moment that I was like, oh, this is really dark. He's basically, like, begging not to be sent there.
Yeah, like, hey, don't kill me, sir.
Yeah. And I think that that whole last season is kind of a commentary on what, like, the upper, you know, the men in power of the British Army would do with the people at the bottom. They were like, I don't know what we should do, so we're just going to have you do this.
Yeah. And well, it's something that they kind of played out in all the other seasons to show how people in power are pushing the chess pieces around. Mm-hmm. But it's the first time that you're seeing it from the chess pieces' point of view.
Mm-hmm.
That you're seeing what it's like to be like, oh, this may be a winning move, but not for everyone that we love.
Mm-hmm.
And in the very end, it is that thing where they all climb out of the trenches, and
that
before they go, he gives such a great little, like, short speech.
That final scene of them standing in the trench, like, looking up, getting ready to go up and climb the ladder and everything, is so heartbreaking when the firing stops. And they're like, oh my god, the guns have stopped. It's we've over. Won. The war's over. We've won. And it's really heartbreaking because you're like, oh, maybe it's going
to
be okay.
But then he correctly points out, no, it's because we're about to go over. Even our generals wouldn't shoot at our own men. They want the Germans to do that for them.
Interesting moment. Blackadder seems really, I mean, like, it's a really sad circumstance, but he seems really cool in that moment.
I think
they're
he's
all
finally
kind
at
of,
peace.
They're all kind of, like, looking up really wide-eyed at the top of the trench, and they're hopeful, and he just immediately starts putting, he just looks down and starts putting bullets in his gun, and he goes, nope, this is why the firing stopped. And you're like, wow, he's so smart.
Well, I don't think it's just that he's smart. I think he's finally at peace and resigned himself to, like, this was always his fate.
We're doing
it. Well, no, I think this was always his fate.
Yeah.
He was always going to die there. Every episode is him trying to get out of the situation.
Yeah.
And right before this final push, he calls in a last favor to a friend that, like, he had saved his life and owed the biggest favor.
Yeah.
And then that guy, somebody very high up in the military, gave him terrible advice that he even knew was wrong.
Yeah.
And so in that moment, I think he realized, like, oh, nobody knows what they're doing, but this is my fate.
There
and
is also...
And he takes it. And it's a great moment.
And there's also another really very quick moment in that scene where Baldrick just kind of says, like, they're about to go up and out, and Baldrick says something like I have a cunning plan. And the way that Blackadder just kind of, like, leans down to him because he's so short, he leans down to Baldrick and is looking up at the top of the trench with them, and he says, I forget what he says, but he says something like, oh, cunning like a fox that's done this and done this.
Yeah.
He's finally humoring Baldrick.
Yeah.
All the other times Baldrick, like, across the entire series, when Baldrick's like, I have a plan, he always is just like, oh god, Baldrick, you're an idiot, blah, 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 blah. He finally, like, in this moment right before they die, like, finally humors him and is like, oh yeah, that sounds good.
And he said, we'll have to talk about it later.
It's
something
really,
on those lines.
Like, it's really small, but it's really sweet.
And then they climb out of the trenches and charge, and...
That's the end of the show!
But
that's
they,
the end of the series!
They go into this slow motion as there's, like, bombs exploding around them, and...
Oh, the Blackadder theme starts to play.
It crossfades into a poppy field.
Yeah.
And it's the only time in the whole show where no credits roll.
Mm-hmm.
Where throughout the entire show, they have, like, 2-minute-long credit sequences where they're giant joke. And the creator, like, whenever they saw what they did with the finale crossfading into that poppy field, they initially had the credits up there. And he realized, like, this isn't... At this point, it's no longer about the people who made the show. What we've just done is reminded people of this war.
And that's something that they were talking about in that interview we watched when they were saying, is it okay if we do a whole comedy season based on World War One, like in the trenches at this war? And everyone was saying, as long as you end it right.
Yeah.
It's like, I was a little prepared for it, but, like, it's one where, like, if you are not...
Yeah.
I'm going to cry right now. But it's just so moving. I mean, like, if you're not prepared for that, the entire series is so kind of lighthearted. I mean, it's dark comedy, but, like, you're just not prepared for that, so.
Yeah.
The whole series is really good, but I think the finale just kind of solidifies how special the show is.
Yeah. If you haven't seen it, go out and watch it. If you have seen it, watch it again. It holds up. It's so clever.
As of right now, as of this episode airing, it is on Amazon Prime. So everybody can watch it.
If you have Amazon Prime,
if you don't like, if you start watching the first season and you don't like it, just skip to the next season.
Really? And honestly, it's one where you could just do any season. I think it helps the second season onwards to see the recurring characters, but if you really like World War I comedy, just go straight to the
It got real. Well, are you ready for your British word that you have to guess?
It's gonna make me sad, but let's do it.
The word that I've chosen today, is it's an old English word.
Ooh.
I felt it was fitting to do an old English word, considering Blackadder is a historical show.
Yeah.
So the word is cockalorum.
Cockalorum?
Yeah, cockalorum. So tell me what you think cockalorum means, and I will tell you what it really means.
Okay. No, I mean, you don't have to do that, because I'm going to be right. You know that, like, decorum is how you compose yourself around other people.
Sure.
And kind of like, well, how do you say this again? Cockalorum?
Cockalorum.
It's whenever you're doing the opposite. When you have no decorum, you're walking into a room cock of the walk, and you are just boisterous as ever and leading with your hips and just, like, much like, Flashheart.
Lord Flashheart?
Lord Flashheart. He is very, he's got cockamorum.
Cockamorum. It's cockalorum.
Cockalorum. He's got it to the nines. Okay. Like, woof. That's cockalorum. Where, like, people are noticing, some people hate you and other people are turned on, but you don't have decorum. That's for sure.
Interesting. Well, that is incorrect.
Well.
Because there is an actual definition. However, your definition is kind of in line with
once
what...
Once again, I'm the Shakespeare of my time.
No. Cockalorum, the meaning of the word cockalorum is a small man with a big opinion of himself.
Hey.
So, yeah. Someone that's a little too cocky, although when it says a small man with a big opinion of himself, I don't know if they mean small stature.
Lord Farquaad.
Like Napoleon, you know?
Oh, yes.
Like, someone small that is very, very proud, or I wonder if it means someone that is just, like, small as in, like, they're nothing special.
Well, I've also heard Napoleon wasn't as tiny as people make him out to be, because just humans weren't also as that
well,
big.
Well, he was in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
That's
so
true,
that's
and he
what...
also went to a water park.
That's what I go off of. Always.
Always.
Well, good job with that one, Sheldon.
Thank you.
Good times. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us for our Blackadder episode. We are very grateful for your time that you have spent listening.
Yeah.
Feel free to give us a review on iTunes. All right. See you next time. Keep calm. I have a cunning plan.
Flash or Twitch, the Hatter's beard. From now, he always shall be single. To fall in love with boys is weird. Especially boys without a tingle. Blackadder. Oh,